Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-1188, Paz Securities, Inc. et al. Petitioners versus Securities and Exchange Commission. Mr. Clark for the petitioners, Ms. Potts for the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 of my 10 minutes for rebuttal. This is the second time this case has been before the court, and I believe that two members of this panel were on the panel before, so there's some familiarity here, and I'll go quickly through the relevant facts. My clients are a broker-dealer and its president, who before the events in question here had been members of the NASD for almost 20 years without any sort of regulatory problem at all. They had a clean record. In February of 2003, the NASD conducted what it itself characterized as a routine examination of their office and asked for certain documents. At that time, Mr. Mizrahi, the president of the company, the record is uncontradicted that he was out of the country, that he was going through a very rough stretch in his life where he had been going through a divorce with his wife and was frankly neglecting his business activities. Whatever the NASD's examiner found in that routine examination, it was not of great concern because the NASD then waited 3 months before it followed up. But in May of 2003, it did make a written document request. My clients did not comply with that request as they should have. There is no denial of that, though again the record is uncontradicted that at the time that request was made, the broker-dealer itself was inactive, and Mr. Mizrahi was out of the country, and there is nothing in the record that suggests that there were any customers. Indeed, there is nothing in the record to suggest that for some period of years before this examination, my clients had even engaged in a transaction involving a security.
Mr. Clark, the commission appears in many passages to rely on the thought that your client's behavior is such that his continuation in the industry poses a risk to investors. Is that beyond the scope of what the prior opinion of this court required?
If that conclusion were the product of the considerations that I think the prior opinion did require the SEC to engage in, perhaps. But however the SEC got to that conclusion, it was not by following the thought process that I believe this court required the SEC to follow on remand. In its opinion, this court required the SEC to do two things. It required it to consider certain mitigating factors that it had not considered the first time around, and it required, second thing, required the SEC to ask itself, is this penalty for these people remedial rather than punitive? And I think if you read this court's opinion, including the citations to Stedman and McCarthy, it's clear that this court wanted the commission to ask that second question based on the facts of this case. It wanted to look at these petitioners and what they had done and decide on those facts whether this penalty was remedial or punitive.
And the citation to Stedman is a CF citation. What we said on our own hook is that the commission must be particularly careful to address potentially mitigating factors before capital punishment. And that isn't that the gist of the opinion on remand?
Well, there's a second thing, which is you also instructed the commission to consider whether this sanction is punitive rather than remedial. And again, I think
they said, well, there's every reason to think that Mizrahi's going to be away in the future, and that this could recur or will recur, and so we need to prevent that.
Well, I, frankly, Your Honor, I don't believe that's exactly how the commission got to that conclusion. What it did, and it concedes this in its brief, is ask itself whether for cases of this type in general, this punishment is remedial or punitive. It didn't ask itself whether it was remedial or punitive for these petitioners on the facts of this case. It concluded that for these types of cases in general, invoking a lot of hypotheticals that have nothing to do with this case, it is remedial rather than punitive. And then it applied the mitigating factors, albeit in a way that we think was really crimped and not consistent with what the court had said. But the SEC admittedly never did what this court had instructed it in the second half of its mandate, which was to consider whether on the facts of this case, this punishment is punitive or remedial. Nobody's arguing whether as a general matter in cases of this sort, the usual punishment should be a lifetime bar. The question is whether it's punitive on the facts of this case. And the SEC never really faced that question because at the invitation of FINRA, it looked at this type of case in general rather than at the facts of this specific case. And
whose invitation?
At the invitation of FINRA or the NASD. And I recognize the SEC's point that this appeal is from what the commission did rather than from what FINRA said in its brief. Having said that, I don't think you can really understand what the commission did without understanding what FINRA asked it to do.
The last full paragraph on 167 begins, applicants' cavalier disregard of the need to ensure that Paz and Mizrahi respond to requests for information in a timely fashion, even while he's out of the country, poses a clear risk of future misconduct. It goes on at some length and concludes the sanctions imposed by NASD appropriately remedy that risk. Now, why isn't that dealing with the facts of this case in terms of whether this is a remedial or a punitive order?
Again, because what the SEC is doing at this point in its opinion is having concluded as a general matter that this punishment is appropriate for cases of this general type, it's then seeing if it should carve back from that. But it never looked overall at the facts of this particular case.
These are the facts of this particular case.
It's one of many facts, but there is nowhere in here did the commission ever look at all of the facts of this case. I mean, much of this opinion, for example, is about people who are using business sharing agreements, expense sharing agreements, to dodge the net capital rules. There was never any suggestion in this case that the net capital rules were at issue. That's about some hypothetical person who was not even in this case.
They had addressed the question about sharing of office space, had they not?
That is in the request, in the petition.
Yeah, that's in the request that was ignored. And they've now said why they think it's very important that people answer that.
Well, they didn't say that in their complaint, and it's not in the record when they summarized their request in their complaint, they did not mention that.
Did not mention what?
Expense sharing.
But it's in the complaint.
No, it's not.
Pardon me. It's in the request for information.
It's in the request, but when they explained what the request was in their complaint, that was so unimportant to them that they didn't even mention it. Page 5 of the appendix is the relevant paragraph in the NASD's complaint. It's paragraph 5, which is where the NASD asks what it is looking for, and it omitted.
Look, at paragraph 4, they say they commenced a routine examination seeking to determine if the firm was operating in compliance with industry rules and regulations. That's the general description. And then they say, in connection with that exam, they asked for information from the firm relating to, among other things. The other things are particularly ones not mentioned here,
and
namely
then there's the next sentence that says, in addition, which finishes that up, but nowhere in this paragraph, they mention, in fact, everything except the expense sharing is mentioned in paragraph 5. And now, 4 years later, the SEC says, well, that's what was really going on here, was concern over expense sharing. It's not in the record.
They've said they don't ask any idle questions. They expect a response to every question.
I understand, Your Honor, there's no question that the parties should have, my clients should have responded to this, but they've been punished severely already, and the question is whether the most severe penalty that's in the penalties that the NASD has the power to met out should have been used here. I'm virtually out of time, so I'll sit. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Rada Potts and I represent the Securities and Exchange Commission. In their brief and here today, petitioners make two complaints about the commission's opinion. The first is that it did not follow this court's opinion and mandate and, quote, consider anew whether the sanctions are excessive or oppressive in light of the factors raised in mitigation. As Judge Ginsburg aptly stated, the gist of the entire opinion on remand is considering the factors petitioners raised in mitigation and explaining why the commission did not believe that, in fact, those factors did mitigate the severity of the violation. And as to the court's second directive, that the commission consider for the first time whether the sanctions serve a remedial purpose, again, the commission's opinion thoroughly describes why these sanctions serve a remedial purpose. And it is simply not correct to say that the commission merely justified a one-size-fits-all sanction. Because, again, as this court just recognized, on page 167 of the appendix is a detailed discussion of why the specific facts of Ms. Rahi's case reinforce the commission's conclusion that the nature of his violation indicated that he posed a future risk of harm to investors and the markets. And to answer your question, Judge Williams, I don't believe that conclusion about the risk of future harm was beyond what this court directed the commission to do. In fact, I think it was exactly what this court directed the commission to do. This court asked the commission to consider the remedial purposes of these sanctions. And of course, when we look to a forward-looking sanction like this, unless the person is currently unfit or demonstrates a risk of future harm, this sort of sanction would not be remedial.
What were those qualifications?
I'm sorry?
What were the qualifications you said?
Unless this person demonstrates a risk of current unfitness, demonstrates current unfitness or a risk, and a risk of future harm.
That's always going to be the case, isn't it? Not a failure to respond to questions, right?
Not necessarily so, Your Honor, because if mitigating circumstances demonstrate otherwise, it will not be the case.
What would mitigate?
Well, we gave some examples.
The person run over by a truck and is in the hospital. But that would only protect him for a few days. After, when he regained consciousness, he could give directions to respond to inquiries.
Well, Your Honor, in practice, the NASD does not operate in that way. The NASD does work with individuals. If they have a situation where they can't comply immediately, you know, all they have to do is call the NASD and say, you know, I'm in the hospital, I'm ill, I am suffering from a compliance crisis, as in the Rouse case. No, really. In the Rouse case, there was a compliance crisis, and that mitigated the violation. Now, if Mr. Rouse had called and discussed it with the NASD, perhaps there would have been no prosecution. So the NASD does not act arbitrarily in this context. But I'd finally like to talk about the complaint about the discussion of the significance of the questions that NASD asked of petitioners. And that discussion is at best ironic. To complain that, well, the commission engaged in a hypothetical discussion and that somehow the commission's brief goes outside the record. Well, the only reason it does that is because petitioners refused to respond to the NASD's inquiries until after they were barred and expelled, and therefore that mooted any need for the NASD to further probe the answers and to determine whether, in reality, petitioners had violated any rules or regulations.
Wouldn't the risks involved in non-response be in some way correlated with the questions which, well, the answers which were not given, right? I mean, when people shoot into the air or shoot aimlessly and hit someone, that produces one penalty. If they shoot into the air and hit no one, it's usually ignored.
Well, I would say this, Your Honor. As the Commission stated in its opinion, when you consider the importance of an inquiry, you have to look at it from the perspective of the NASD at the time it makes the inquiry. There may be some occasions where the NASD has more suspicion of wrongdoing than others, but there may also be situations where the NASD goes into a routine exam, asks a question about trading inactivity, finds out either there's some temporary activity at the firm or some kind of technical glitch, and therefore there haven't been reports.
You're saying that with viewing it ex ante, the conceivable answer to any question may be one which, if we knew the answer, would tell us that there are risks for investors, right? Serious risks.
There are.
So you're basically, the ex ante perspective means that the question is always vital, absolutely vital, because it might yield vital.
It might, and it does. I mean, there have been instances where massive manipulations have been discovered as a result of routine examinations. Unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Potts.
Your Honor, not only were we shooting in the air and didn't hit anything, we were shooting blanks, and yet we've been sanctioned for first-degree murder. Yes, ex ante, the commission might be able to suggest reasons why a routine examination might have been very, very important. But the key thing here, and the reason why we did make the argument about going outside the record, is that they are now suggesting possible reasons for this inquiry that are contradicted by what they said in the proceeding. They have been invented, frankly, by the SEC in an attempt to fill in some justification for what the NASD was doing. But when the NASD wrote its complaint and explained what it was after, this whole bit about expense sharing and the net capital rules was nowhere to be seen.
What is it that contradicts that?
The NASD's summary of why it commenced this proceeding. If this had been the reason, one would have expected them to mention it.
Okay, so it doesn't contradict it. So you're saying there's a pregnant silence there.
I will concede that point, yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Clark. Ms. Potts, thank you. Case is submitted.